Ian Robertson has chosen another one of the 50 essays by Jonathan Mardler to read as our first feature this week. This one was published as a column in the EDP on Wednesday, December the 12th, 1951. It's entitled A Fantasy of Trams and is all about the long-forgotten trams in Norwich and elsewhere. Here is Ian to tell us about the trams.
Another essay by Jonathan Mardler, this one written over 70 years ago, on December the 12th, 1951. A Fantasy of Trams. A consulting engineer lacking steel for coastal defences at Munsley has found a dump of old tram lines in Buckinghamshire, and through this providential discovery, it is hoped to build a revetment at the foot of the cliffs in time to stop Munsley Church from falling into the sea. I should like to think that an archaeologist may rediscover these tram lines several hundred years hence, and after minute investigation of this strange deposit of steel rails and concrete beneath the seashore, conjecture that here, and not in the Thames estuary, was the site of the legendary Southend Pier. For I hope people will always be interested in things like seaside piers and trams and gasworks. The imagination of man in the 19th century produced nothing more rich and strange. For trams in particular, I have an affection. Like stagecoaches, they have had but a short time to flower, for the roads in England have but just been brought to the pitch of comparative perfection, which enable the coaches to rattle along at 12 miles an hour, when the whole system of stagecoaching was superseded by the railways. And so with the trams. The electric tramways had just become so thoroughly assimilated into English towns when they were challenged by motor buses. All progressive boroughs in the south of England then laughed their trams to scorn and became busy digging up the tracks, as they had been a generation previously laying them. In South London and the industrial north of England, trams still linger. The people there are of tough fibre, less interested in fashion than durability, and I fancy that the trams of the industrial north will survive longer than those of South London, which is steadily being penetrated by that 20th century lust for speed, which ends in traffic blocks. But in places like Bradford and Bolton, people will probably be contented for years yet to bump and rumble and crash along, facing each other on hard wooden benches at the steady 12 miles an hour of electric traction. In Leeds recently, I was delighted to discover a park of retired trams. By the evidence of their scarlet paint and black lettering, they had belonged to the London Passenger Transport Board, but being rejected by the effete South, they had retired in their later years to the city that still honours trams, and I surmise that, under new colours, they may still be jolting through the homely fog between Street Lane and Briggate, long after the last relic of late Victorian transport has disappeared from the Victoria Embankment. No city does its trams such honour as Leeds. On that same journey on which I discovered the honourable relics of the London Passenger Transport Board, I had travelled from the sooty rotunda to the Corn Exchange, through miles of black streets and pink housing estates, to the green belt which contains Temple Newsom, the ancient, vast and beautiful mansion, which was once the homes of the Earls of Halifax and is now a municipal palace. Its grounds serve Leeds as a public park and golf course. Its apartments are an art gallery and museum of fine furniture. They contain, amongst other things, some of the best paintings and drawings from the Norwich School, outside Norwich itself. The place is all very carefully and thoughtfully adapted to its new purpose, and alongside the stately avenue of Temple Newsom, the democracy of Leeds rides up to its country seat in a corporation tram. The fare from the Corn Exchange is, as far as I remember, sixpence. There never was a cheaper flight of fantasy. I often wish Norwich had kept its trams, the favourite Sunday afternoon ride of the citizens from Orford Place to the cemetery was, I used to feel, as important a manifestation of the local character as, for instance, the Sabbath promenade of the townspeople of Lowestoft round the fish market. Trams promoted a decent leisure in our proceedings. They rebuked and restrained the scurrying of impatient motor cars. There was a sense of continuity about them. The swaddled drivers, with their red noses and walrus moustaches, might have been directly descended from the drivers of the horse omnibuses. And on the open stretches of their routes, they could give you all the elation of speed with none of the risks. A tram, pitching and rolling along Newmarket Road, with its iron wheels bumping and banging, its poles sparking and swishing along the wires, and the driver turning his handles with glorious abandon, could give you a greater sensation of speed than a motor coach travelling at 60 miles an hour. The tram may only have been doing 15 miles an hour, but it let everybody know it was putting its heart into the job. It is sad that our trams were taken away before we had learned to value our Victoriana. One day, somebody will form a society to preserve trams, and just as now we seek to preserve windmills and wherries. And at the same time, it is probable that local amenity societies will agitate for the restoration of gasworks, and the Palace Pier at Brighton will be scheduled as a national monument.
Thank you, Ian.